Welcome back to the Rock Your Retirement Show. I have such a treat for you. Today, it's not just Barbara with me, but we have a guest on the show, Marnie Jameson. And she wrote this really interesting book that I wish I would have read a while ago called Right Size Today to Create Your Best Life Tomorrow. And Barb and I have read a lot of retirement books. Barb, you may have read more retirement books than me. I thought it was very interesting. So, Marnie, welcome to the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and why you wrote this book.
Well, first of all, thank you very much for having me. It's an honor to be with you both. And well, I've been writing a long time, and this is my seventh book somehow. And I've written books on downsizing when I cleaned out my parents' house, which was, if you've been through that, and most of us have, and nobody gets out of here without doing that. I wrote Downsizing the Family Home. And then after I had unfortunately went through a divorce and then happily got remarried, I wrote a book called Downsizing the Blended Home, When Two Houses Become One. That's a journey. And then a publisher asked me to write a book on leaving a legacy, how to leave everything you own to leave the legacy you want. And that, you know, means when you die, which was kind of depressing, but necessary to talk about, I guess. And so I was sort of tired of talking about aging and dying and divorce. And I thought, well, maybe we could get a happier subject. And I thought, right sizing, you know, I'm in the last third of my life. Maybe it'll be longer. But, you know, when you're 55 plus, I'd like to think about how do we get to live exactly the way we want to live. We've gotten the kids through school. Please, we've gotten our job and careers, you know, more or less taken care of. And now we can maybe have a little more flexibility.
Did I read somewhere, Marnie, that you have a newspaper column?
Yes. In fact, right this month marks my 20th anniversary. I have been writing a weekly column that appears in newspapers nationwide for 20 years, which makes me feel very old, but also very grateful that those papers are still out there and still publishing me. And it's been a wonderful journey and a wonderful experience. I write about what I'm struggling with in my own home and life. I get to talk to experts and channel their great advice. It's therapy for me, and I hope free advice for readers. It's been a wonderful ride. That's 1,040 columns, it turns out. So yeah, I've been around the block a few times and parlayed some of the very best information from all those interviews and the themes I've written about into my books. So we work hand in hand.
Isn't that interesting how we take these interviews and we use them in our own lives? That's the whole reason I started this show. A lot of the listeners know that I'm not quite retired yet. Now, Barbara started on the show 6 months before she retired, and she made that leap. And Barbara, what's it been, like 2 years?
It'll be 3 years in the spring, in May of this year. I retired in May of 2021, right in the middle of the pandemic, like lots of boomers did. And again, with Kathy's help, with the help of the podcast, it really focused me on what did I need to really look at in my life? And what did I want to change? What did I want to keep the same? If you haven't listened before, maybe Kathy could give you the six pillars of retirement. And we focus on those things as we talk each month.
The six pillars of retirement lifestyle are spiritual, significant other, friendship, your purpose in life, which I used to call volunteer or work, family, and health. Those are the six pillars that we tend to talk about on this show. It is interesting how I do get a lot of requests from financial advisors to come on the show, but we don't talk about finances. So we were talking before I hit record, and you and Barbara were talking about some of the things in your book. Can you explain to the listener about your questionnaire and how you weight that? I thought it was hugely interesting.
Well, thank you. I do think it's what separates this book out. So you both are aware of all the retirement magazine and literature out there on best cities to retire, best places to retire. And all that's great, except I don't know about you, Kathy, or you, Barb, but I'm not average. You're not average. So how do we know what the best place to retire is? Because what's right for you is not the same for me. So you've really got to drill down into What do you want? Do you want to live in a bustling city? Do you want to live on a pasture with view of the horses? Do you want to live on the water? Do you want to live on the golf course? Do you want to live near your family? Do you want to live farther from your family? 7% of people do. And that's not all I'm going to say about that. What's the right mix? So we can't just say a cookie cutter approach. And maybe it's really, really important that I'm close to the arts and the museum. And that's a 5 on a scale of 5, but it's only a 2 that I get to see my grandchildren. Or maybe it's switched. I don't know, because only you know that. So that's how we score things. You actually give everything a value, like a 5 out of 5, I need to be near my kids, and 5 out of 5, I need to be next to stellar healthcare, and I want 4 seasons, or I don't want snow. Well, what is it? And maybe you don't care. I think climate's overrated. I could be happy either place. So to me, that's a 2. So you actually answer for yourself what matters to you. And you don't have to be able to multiply any higher than 5. So I am not a mathematician. I'm a writer. So it's not hard. The formula is easy. You both have taken it. Maybe you can vouch for me. But it does give you a really clear picture and a really objective picture, because deciding where to live and deciding whether to move is a multifactorial decision. And this book helps you deconstruct. It starts off with, do I stay or do I go? Maybe you stay in the same house and just make modifications in that home so it suits you into the next chapter of your life. Or maybe you stay in the same community, but in a different kind of home. Maybe it's one level. Maybe it's a townhome so you can lock and go. Maybe it is on that golf course. I don't know. That's up to you. Or maybe you leave the state. You leave the area altogether and go into the house that's right for you. But only you can answer these questions. And reading a magazine that talks about the 20 best places to retire isn't going to answer that question for you.
Oh, Barbara and I had a conversation while we were reading your book. Barbara went through it. Why don't you tell the listener how you fared on the questionnaire? What do you call this? Not a questionnaire. What is it?
It's an exercise.
What makes people move, and should I stay or should I go? And you called it a decision tree, weighing the variables. Now, I think if you're a longtime listener, you've heard our journey of how we decided to do what we were going to do, which for you, Marnie, is we'd lived in the same house for 44 years with family all nearby, but not our children. Our children had moved several hours away south, and then another 2 hours after that. And after traveling for 18 months in a motorhome, we realized we were really missing our grandkids. We were missing out. And so that was kind of the initial thing. I thought we went through a pretty good set of decision trees. I'm a planner by background. And so my husband and I had lots and lots of discussions. I was a little bit floored, though, when I took this little survey and filled in my answers and his. And it caused a lot of discussion, in our family, which I think is the point. I think that is the key point, is that if you're single, okay, that's one set of decisions and you can talk to friends and family. But if you're a couple, it's got to work for both. So the things that were important to me weren't as high on the scale as they were for him. So I was looking at the bottom line. So for me, I don't know whether I just kind of waited it, but it validated our move to where we're living now. For my husband, he was still yearning for the things he was missing, because it was his family place that he's lived since he was a little boy, since he was 6. And it's, so he was there for 60 years. So leaving his mom and his brothers and his sisters and his nieces and nephews has been really hard. Leaving his golf buddies, very difficult. But the whole thing about right sizing, taking a triple car garage and a 2-bay shed full of a lifetime of hobbies and equipment and tools and a tractor, he was in tears. He was in tears when we had to move everything. And so I thought your book was very timely. It was very thought-provoking. And for someone who hasn't gone through it yet, I think it's just a necessity to do these thinking processes before it's too late. Because in Puget Sound, if you sell and leave the family home and you right-size, in your words, you can't go back financially. So it's a pretty permanent decision and shouldn't be taken lightly. And so I think the tools you provide, at least for us, were excellent, even though it was after the fact.
But I've read a lot of books. I was a financial advisor for 25 years and never came across the weighted average the way that you did it. And I thought it was brilliant.
Thank you. And I'm not even a mathematician. So that coming from you, who spent your life in numbers, that's high praise. But I do think it's just so emotional and so overwhelming. And I feel for your husband. It's so hard. That's why in the middle of the book, we have examples of people. One woman was right in that she wanted to move from Colorado to Florida, which I've actually done. But when she got to Florida, she didn't get in the right place. She didn't stick the landing. So it wasn't that moving was wrong. It was she just didn't get the right place. So many variables. And I have another older couple, much older. They're in their 80s. They are still really happily married, but she moved into a beautiful 55 plus community. She's on the high rise. She has a view of a lake and a fountain, and there's housekeeping and gym classes and meals made for her. And her husband stayed at the house, which with his shed and his work equipment and all the things falling apart in the house, which was driving her nuts because things weren't kept up or taken care of. It was overwhelming her. And she was ready to have a life of leisure, and he's not. He comes over every Wednesday and he stays a couple nights and he goes back and it's
back to dating.
That's what he said. He said, it feels like we're dating. It was pretty cute, but you know, it's not everyone's cup of tea, but you know, it's just such an emotional process and it really isn't one size fits all. And it takes a lot of thought. And I hope that what I'm doing in this book is opening the door to the discussion with couples to talk about what's important and why, and to sort of break down all the different components. There's friendships. There's just the flow of your own home and the history there. And then there's your social life. If you have a church or family close to you, all that factors in. So also, you know, what is the lifestyle that you're craving and what would make your life just the best it can be going forward? And I think that right sizing is about creating a home or moving to a home that is the perfect physical, emotional, social, and financial fit for you today and moving forward. So that was my lens that I was writing throughout the book.
I have a question for Barbara. You said that you were more the bottom line kind of person. After your husband, did he read the entire book or did he just take the sort of the quizzes in the book?
Yeah, he wouldn't read any book. He only watches things where they keep score or shoot 'em up movies. But he indulges me when I'm getting ready for a podcast and preparing. I tell him a lot about it. And then I asked him orally the quiz and then filled in his numbers. And I don't even know if he wanted to know the answer, right? That, you know, what it was. But what he did say, though, is that he does miss our home in our hometown that we'd lived in our whole lives. When you come to a completely new community, it's everything. It's doctors, dentists, and making friends at our age can be difficult. Right? When you have a lifetime of a community and you leave that, but we came to be with our children and grandchildren, which he's over the top about that, to reduce our expenses. He's happy about that, but he's just kind of yearning for what we had in the past. And so now his vocabulary is, well, this will be good for the next 10 years until our grandkids are in college. Then he says, well, maybe we'll go back. And I'm like, in 10 years, you're going to be 76. Really? You want to go back to a farm and mowing and all that? And he goes, yeah, you're right. So I think it's more he's yearning for being younger than really where we're at. We're in a really good place now. And I think he'll adjust, but I think his transition is harder. I've joined women's groups, Bible studies, trivia, painting, and he's golfing. So he hasn't connected with other men in the same way, which was really helpful in your book, talking about how sometimes it's harder for men to make those connections. Or if you're an introvert, I thought you covered it really well, Marnie.
Well, thank you. How far away are you from your old home? How many hours?
About two and a half, depending on the traffic. Okay. But we're 15 minutes from our son and his wife and our two grandkids. And our daughter lives in Oregon, and it's only 2 hours away, where before it was a 5 to 6 hour drive with Puget Sound traffic. So I've seen my grandchildren more in the last 5 months than I did in 10 years. And the 10 years was only on the holidays, you know, and special days. It wasn't every day, Grandma. So I have no regrets. I'm so grateful we got to do this.
My husband and I had kind of the opposite situation where I was really the person that said we need to move because my husband has medical conditions and all of his family lives on the East Coast. When we lived in San Diego, we saw his family a total of 3 times. That was in 10 years, 2 weddings and a funeral. And all 3 times we flew to the East Coast. They never came to San Diego to visit us. And since we've been here, and we've lived here now 5 years, we've seen his family probably six dozen times. We've seen his cousins, his brother, just a lot of his cousins that we never would have seen in San Diego. And then his brother does not live super close to us, but he has a second home about a half an hour away from us. So when they come in their second home, we usually will see them at least once. I did not want to leave San Diego, but I wanted what was best for my husband. And that's why I moved. And when I moved to where I am, I had two criteria. And one was no snow. And that was very important to me. And I wanted to move into a Sun City. That was because I knew that it would be a lot easier to make friends. I didn't want to move into the villages because that's just too hot for me. So where we live now is about as perfect as you can get away from San Diego. And I can never go back. I just can't afford to move back there. I think we would have made the same decision had we read your book, because my number one criteria was being near my husband's family. And so that's what we did. You wanted that, and Barbara wanted to be near family too. Yeah. So
you stack that high and it will appropriately influence what's the best place for you. And in both of your cases, and I was a native of Southern California girl and grew up in Orange County. And my last home there was in San Juan Capistrano. I sold it in 2003. Our kids were small and we moved to Colorado just because we were ready for a change and just really ready for a change. It wasn't the same California that I had grown up with, traffic and immigration issues and cost of living and, you know, the element I was raising my children in. All of those things were coming to bear. And we left four grandparents in Southern California, which was very, very difficult. But we thought we need to forge a path that's best for our lives and our kids. It's not easy. It's trade-offs. And that's what I think in Barb's case with her husband, reframing will be very helpful. Reframing and saying, but look what we have, rather than look what we don't have. Embrace the memories of very happy times, but also embrace the wonderful future and the memories you're going to be making because of where you are. And I think point of view is very, very healthy and important for couples to remind each other. And also I need to remind myself at times, I know this is loss, feels like loss, but look at what you've got to break the eggshell for that chicken to hatch. You've got to break things down. The chrysalis has to fall off for the butterfly to emerge. And there is a process in life that means you need to discard old ways and move in order to grow.
I wanted to talk a little bit about what I called your second half of the book. It almost felt like two books in a way. And that was the part three. It talked about what every house needs and what it doesn't. And I do have to say, I'm a purger. I would call myself a cozy minimalist. I want warm, cozy things. I want the furniture. I want the lighting. I want the candles. I want the plants. But I don't need a lot of bric-a-brac. And because I was moving from a kitschy country farmhouse of 40 years style, I purged it all and started over. It was a little harder for my husband to do that. But I have friends and I've met so many people that their things are their life. It's very difficult for them to even imagine moving because they'd have to get rid of things. And I do think there are people that get locked in and stay in a house beyond what really serves them because of that. And so I appreciated how you talked about living well and beautifully, but just not having so much stuff. And I just wanted you to maybe talk about that because it seemed like you had some certain things like how many wine glasses do you need and how many knife sets and what kind of kitchen towels to buy. And I have to be honest, I was kind of jealous that I didn't have this when I was purging, like, oh my gosh. So I got rid of a lot of stuff, but I still got maybe more to go and then replacing things. So maybe you could talk about what was the impetus for talking about that in this book.
Well, I'm very encouraged that you pulled this out like you did, Barb, because it was a book of its own. And I really love the idea. I was going to call it Buy It Once, Buy It Right, or Buy It Right the First Time. And my agent, who I've been with for many years, we're like, you know, sisters who fight. She said, nobody wants to read a book that tells them they can't shop. And I'm like, no, this is not that. This is not a book. She's from New York, right? She said, I love to shop. I'm not telling you to stop shopping. I'm telling you to buy that right and know what you're looking for. And she just didn't feel like it was a big enough topic. And I still disagree with her, but I got my way because I still got to squirt it into this book. And it's really, really on point with right sizing. because the first part of the book is where to live and how, and then people who went that way and how did it work out for them and different models of right sizing. And I just want to throw in there that one third of the people in the last third of life who get a new house upsize. It's not all about downsizing, and half same size from in the same size house, but in another place. So this is not a downsizing journey necessarily. So then once you get that perfect house, whether it's a townhome or a 6-bedroom mansion, what do you put in it? Don't junk it up. Don't just drag everything in with you. This is your time to edit and purge. And so I do go through what every room needs. And we have the kitchen and the bathroom and we did the bedroom with the linens and the mattresses and all have those kitchen knives that we hang on to that don't ever quite cut right, or those sheets that don't breathe and we still use them. But because we paid money for them, but we don't really love them, but we don't know why. What I love about this is I was able to talk to experts to say, what are the properties that make an excellent kitchen towel or that make an excellent mattress or that make excellent sheets or excellent cutting knife, excellent cutlery, and a great wine glass? You know, what are the properties to look for? And I don't like to get too brand oriented because that's a lot of hype and marketing, but they're actual properties you can know to look for when you're picking out sheets or towels or cutlery or all these things. So you live with quality and not clutter. And you can then start letting go of those sheets that don't quite fit or they don't quite breathe or they pill. And you don't feel so bad because now you know what you're doing. And I think that's what drove me on the quest as I interviewed experts in each one of these areas. That idea of how do I know? How do I know what I'm doing and how do I get it right? And how do I buy that quality? So you can do what Barb has done, which is the cozy minimalist, and have your home that's comfortable and has everything you need, but nothing you don't. And I think that's the sweet spot.
But then you have plenty of people like me that are on the verge of, what do you call it? Hoarding. Yeah, I'm a collector and it is hard to let things go. You know, for example, I just recently was able to let go of 5 of the 10. Technically, I'm a lifetime member, but I haven't paid in so many years, so I probably lost that status of an organization called Million Dollar Roundtable. It's for insurance agents, financial advisors, that kind of thing, who do a certain level of production and follow a certain ethical creed. Well, it's really hard to get in. And so each year that I was a member, I got this book and I would go to the party, the thing that they did every year where you learned a whole bunch of stuff and it was in a different location every year. And you worked really hard and you had to pay to get yourself there. Nobody could pay that for you. That's part of the deal, right? You had to pay to go there. And so I would always get the books, and the books had a transcript of everything that went on, all of the talks that went on in the program. And of course, I never opened these books, but I knew that they were there. If I ever wanted to open them, I could, but I never opened them, not once. And I've been thinking about getting rid of stuff, but it's just really hard. My husband said, you know, Kathy, you've got a lot of books up in the attic. You know, someday they're going to come crashing down because they're so heavy. And he says, why don't you start? And I said, okay, bring one box down. I will look at one box. And in that box was these MDRT books. And I said, so I didn't want to throw them away. And so I went on a Facebook group that I'm a part of. And I said, I have 10 of these Million Dollar Roundtable books. If anybody wants them, if you pay the shipping, I will send them to you. Someone raised her hand. She said, I will take one or all of them if you want to get rid of them. And so we were trying to, I've put them in one box, cost us about $20 to ship. And I told her, I said, I'm going to send it COD. And so you can pay me when you get them. And she said, okay. So we boxed them up and I had my husband take them to the post office. And I said, you know, you're going to send them media mail. If he'd sent them regular, it probably would have cost like $500 because they're heavy. And I said, you're going to send it media mail and make sure you do COD. So he shipped them off. Now he forgot to do the COD part. So it actually cost me $20 to get rid of these books. And I have 5 more. So if she wants the others, I'm going to make sure I take them to the post office. But it was so hard, Marnie and Barb, so hard to get rid of these books. And I still have 5 more to get rid of. But that was my little baby step. Part of it was I didn't want them to go to waste. And so by me finding somebody who wanted them and valued them, instead of having them go to a landfill, it made it much easier for me to release those from my life. If you're the type of person that's like on the verge of hoarder like me, I feel your pain. But there are ways where you can give something up, make sure it goes to a home where it's going to be used or loved or whatever. You don't have to necessarily keep it in your house. And I am along this journey with you, listener. I am trying to get rid of my things as well. I've got way too many things. And right now, you know how Audible has free books all the time, you know, and a lot of times they're books from years and years ago. Right now they have Lord of the Rings on. And so I'm like, okay, well, J.R. Tolkien, you know that he was a Christian, right? And I never really associated his books with Christianity. And so I'm listening to Lord of the Rings. I'm like, Lord of the Rings doesn't have anything to do with Christianity. What we are talking about right now has a lot to do with Lord of the Rings. He gets this gold ring and everybody wants this gold ring and they cannot give it up. Once they touch it, this ring takes over their life and it's kind of like our stuff. You know, it really does have to do with spirituality. You don't have to hang on to these things. It's so interesting how I've read this book in the past, but now I'm reading it through different eyes because of your book, because I'm in a class at church and I'm like, oh yeah, hanging on to things really is not good for you. And that's what Lord of the Ring talks about too. Go back and reread that book. I mean, we all read it as kids, right? So that's kind of my story about being a hoarder almost.
You know, I think you touch on something. I just wrote about this in my column last week and it rang a bell with a lot of people. I wrote about in our church, we had Quilting Sunday and I didn't know this was every year because I don't go to church that often. I just happened to swerve into church on Quilting Sunday and there were these quilts, handmade quilts on all the rows. The church was covered in these quilts. The ladies who were the quilters made 101 quilts. I thought, oh, isn't that sweet? The quilting ladies, right? And then I found out that this is part of a huge Lutheran World Relief effort. They have sent 194,000 quilts in 2023 around the world. And she told us there was a story about these kids in Tanzania who it gets very cold there and they don't have very many clothes and they have to sit on the ground in almost their bare skin. They are stunted. They have something called stunting where they don't grow to their potential because what food they do get is used to keep warm and not to grow and not to have cognitive development. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, what these women want are the sheets that you're not using anymore, fitted, king, twin, doesn't matter, to use the, as backs of quilt in any fabric squares. They put them together and they send them off. They sent 26,000 quilts to Tanzania last year, another 34,000 to the Ukraine. And these are ground covers. These are tents. These keep families and children warm. I'm like, what? We have this clutter in our linen closet that right now could be going to help kids. So if that doesn't make you run to your linen closet, I don't know what's wrong with you. And the same thing with like towels for animal shelters. They're looking, the rescues need towels for not only bedding, but to dry the animals off when they come in and they're dirty and they need baths. They need stuffed animals and they need luggage for foster kids who go from home to home with a trash bag. If you have a suitcase you're not using, foster care. So there are so many ways you can give in meaningful ways, and it'll make your heart feel so good. Like you felt sort of good, except you had to pay the freight, which was unfortunate. We've all been there. So anyway, I just think if you can be creative about letting go, and if you can let go and help others along the way, it's just pay it forward. You know, it's just pay it forward.
I work with people who help people downsize. They're called move managers, right? And so mm-hmm. they take your 5,000 square foot house and they help you downsize into a 700 square foot apartment. One of the things that one of the move managers talked to me about, I think I had her on my show maybe 10 years ago and we're still friends. And she said, a lot of times it's the memory that you want. It's not the thing. And she says, take a picture of the thing. And now you have that memory of the thing. And get rid of the thing, but keep the picture. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that was really good advice that mm-hmm. she gave. But yeah, we have so many things. And when you're talking about kids from Africa and Ukraine and all the things that they don't have that we are just sitting on, right? We're not even using.
It's important to keep that frame of reference open at all times and just look for where could this benefit others. You know, I also like to tell people who struggle with hoarding to, you know, you don't have to get a divorce, but you might try a temporary separation. And just, I keep a bag in my closet and a box in the garage. And I'm looking at my closet, you know, I haven't worn this in a while. I just stick it in there. And I know it's still there in case something happens and I suddenly need to wear that top. But when the bag fills up, And then I give a second run through and I'm like, you know what? Really don't need any of this. Then I can do that, take it to the Goodwill. And the same thing in the garage. You know, when I get things come in, they don't come out. When you get that set of glasses for a Christmas party or something, or you get another flower vase, shove it out, start shoving stuff out. And then pretty soon you have a couple boxes in the garage and a couple bags of clothes off to the Goodwill. And then you can give it all a second thought. You don't just one day tear the Band-Aid off and just say, okay, I'm going to clean everything out and take it to the Goodwill by 5 o'clock. No, you can take it a little slower. And I think that may help people. It's something that definitely gets better with time. And the more you've let go of, and sometimes people who've had loss, like I've talked to people who've had loss in everything in a fire or everything in a flood. And they're like, oh, well. And they build on. And guess what? Life goes on and they go on and it's all okay. Yeah, I'm sure they have some pangs, but it's what can they do? You know, so they make new memories and then they're just, you become a little less attached, which maybe people think is sad, but I think it's probably healthy.
Probably. And we didn't have anything. None of us had anything when we were in college.
Right.
We didn't have anything. We all accumulated all this extra stuff.
Well, I think another factor, and it sounds like you wrote a book about it, is your parents, or now I'm the parent. And I know my children, we got rid of a lot of stuff. And so one recommendation I have is go live in an RV for any amount of time and realize how happy and how great you can live with very few things. You don't need as many clothes or shoes or cooking utensils. You can live quite comfortably on a camping trip for 1 or 2 weeks. But my kids are grateful that we made the decisions ourselves about what to let go of so that when we pass, this is much more manageable. And they both said, thank you. And my daughter talked about something like maybe Nordic or Swedish or something, that it's a thing.
It's Swedish death cleaning.
There you go. But they do way ahead of dying, right? The parents go ahead and as an act of a gift to their children, they make those decisions, which can be really hard if you don't want to face death. But at some point, looking at yourself and saying, do I want to leave this mess for my children? Because the things that gave you pleasure in life will cause them grief in your death, right? Because of the time and the effort. I mean, you see estate sales and the kids and grandkids aren't going to appreciate our old brown, heavy wood furniture. It's not in style anymore. But your brain goes to, but I spent so much. It was meant to last. It was supposed to be an heirloom, but their tastes have changed. And now it's just a millstone around your neck. So I really appreciated how you talked about being intentional about the things you keep and giving the things that give you life and then letting go of the rest. There's nothing better than a good deadline and a move to force you to do it. It's hard to just wake up and go, I'm going to clean the garage. I'm going to clean the closet. But if you have to move on a deadline, it's a good way to go. So I recommend read your book first before you
read the book.
Before you do that.
Read the book. But if you're like me and you've already made your move and you still have a bunch of stuff, start with one box. You know, I can do one box. You can do one box. So there we go. Marnie, is there anything that you'd like to leave with the listener before we say goodbye?
We've touched on so many great things. I guess picking up on Barb's point, I wrote the book Downsizing the Family Home when I was cleaning up my parents' house who didn't do what you did and had lived in the same house for 50 years. And my mom had her maternity clothes and she's now in her late 80s. So I'm like, Mom, I believe in medical miracles, but come on here. So it was super hard. And you want to be a really good shepherd and of their belongings, things that meant a lot to them, but you can't keep it all. You've got a fully loaded house yourself. When I was writing that book, my agent, same one does like to shop. She said, you know, write it for the older person who doesn't want to leave a mess to their kids, for both, write both sides, right? For the adult child who's dealing with the onslaught and the senior parent who wants to leave a blessing, not a burden to their children. And when she put that new lens on it, it doubled the audience. Of course, then AARP picked it up and hundreds of thousands of copies have sold. And it's been, you know, big seller. And it's really hit home literally for so many people. And I do think that is the guide light that I use and the guidepost that you should use. I look at my drawers and say, well, you know, I wrote a book, What to Do with Everything You Own to Leave the Legacy You Want, in case you walk out the door. Because I know none of us is ever going to die, ever, ever, ever. But just in case, you know, there may be 7% of the people do die. And maybe you walk out the door and get hit by a meteor. Are your drawers in dying order? Are your papers in dying order? Can somebody figure out your passwords? Can they get on your computer? Can they shut down your checking accounts? Can they have access to things? Come on. Do they know what's important? So I think that's a mental lens that you need to think about as you look through your home and think about, what if I got hit by that meteor? Would people know what to do in the aftermath? And I think that's a gift you leave your family, and as well as whatever inheritance you may leave. I think a bigger gift is orderliness and putting a bow on it and showing them that you thought it through.
What great parting words. Thank you so much. This has been very informative and fun. And thank you for coming on the show. I hope you had fun. Where can people find your book, and what are all the details that you'd like them to know?
Yeah, well, they're welcome to hop on my website. It's Marnie, M-A-R-N-I, Jameson, like the whiskey.com. And you can get under book tab, you'll see all the books, and they're available wherever books are sold. You can get a signed copy from me. You have to pay a little extra because I have to take on the shipping, and I will charge you for that. But I can sign them for you. And you can also sign up for my free blog. If you don't live in an area that has a paper that carries my column, and shame on that newspaper, then you can get my blog for free. And it's the same column 2 weeks later, and you can subscribe right on my website, MarnieJameson.com.
Thank you so much, both of you, Barb and Marnie, for coming on the show. And for the listener, we'll see you next time on the Rock Your Retirement Show. Bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.